Ready. All right. And 3, 2, 1. Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 25th of January, Anno Domini 2009. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use on this exclusively podcast edition of Soundbites. It's a Syracuse game on Wham today.
Yep, Syracuse basketball, and we knew our listeners just didn't want to be without at least some version of Soundbites. So.
And so here we are doing this here.
We actually got our butts out of bed when we could have taken the time to, the other word.
Our listeners are worth it.
Our listeners are worth it. I'm tired, but our listeners are worth it. It's the changing weather. I got this sinus thing.
Oh,
no. Pressure. It's like somebody's beating me in the head.
Tell me about
it. Oh, God, I hate that.
I wake up in the morning and, you know, the mouth is dry because you've been breathing through the mouth and it's all.
Listen to these old people, Steve.
Yeah.
You can both shut the hell up.
Yes, really.
It's easy enough. Remember, this is podcast only, so I can say anything I want.
I can do when I post-produce it.
Right.
I was just thinking, God, that sounds
familiar. Nice to me.
Before we do anything else, I wanted to let you know what we see a lot nowadays are what are called cyber squatters, or they're people who grab a URL that's similar to yours or like yours in some way.
That happened to Jethro Tull several years back.
Yeah,
and it's been a real.
For example, Google without the E.
Or
Google with a D or an R or any of the letters around the E.
Okay.
With one O.
Right, with one O. Or goggle.com.
Or three O's.
Or three O's, right. Well, I got hit. The Security Tango.
Really?
There's a security-tango.com.
Okay.
I had no idea that the Security Tango was that popular.
That really says you've made it.
Yeah,
when
I guess
you get spoofed. Yeah.
I'm very impressed. But so don't be surprised. If you go to it, you'll see that it's just another one of those sites that has, it's essentially circular. They make you go through all their stuff, and eventually they're bringing you to paid advertisements, and that's all it is.
$13. I've had two folks call and complain. Matter of fact, we got another one yesterday. Wife came down and said, just to let you know, this one lady said she got hit double charges for something else close to the Security Tango for $13.95, and it's like, no.
So they may well be going to the security-tango.com. What?
They wanted to charge her for the Security Tango?
No, yeah. She was out looking, thought she had the Security Tango, I think.
She may have gotten to this place.
Mm-hmm.
So don't be fooled. The real security-tango.com, A, has no dash in it, and B, is an awfully ugly site because I'm the one who put it together. So do not be fooled.
And I'm impressed with you, Nick.
Why?
Because you've made it in the world. You've got your own spoofed URL.
Is that exciting or what?
Yeah.
Well, the best thing to do then is just have them go to our Soundbites page, soundbites.org, and go from there.
Right.
That's the safest. Well, this way you're not going to get burned.
Make sure soundbites.org, because soundbites.com is something with somebody else. Bites with
somebody in England.
Is somebody else.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Speaking of interesting searching, Ricardo Montalban passed away recently.
Yes, he did.
And
Corinthian leather,
yep.
No more Corinthian leather.
And so there's this big thing in Wikipedia that there is no such thing as Corinthian leather. They made it up for the commercial. But almost all of the comments about his death were people shouting Khan, because he also played Khan in Star Trek. So someone did
The Wrath Thereof.
And in the classic episode that spawned the movie, someone did an analysis at Google searching for who was searching for Khan. And apparently there's some strange people out there.
No.
Of course, Khan with one A was the top hit. But then apparently Khan with 13 A's had a very high spike in search queries. And Khan with 43 A's had a very high spike in search queries.
Steve, you need a hobby.
43 A's. And who counted them?
Google Analytics will
right.
Yeah, they had what was searched for.
That's just very funny. All right, let's start with this interesting piece of news, which leads to our poll of the week. Hollywood has gotten better at delaying pirates from posting illegal copies of Oscar-nominated films on the internet, The bad news is that eventually a higher percentage of nominated films are ending up on the web. Andy Bio, no relation as far as I know to Scott, an independent journalist and programmer, said he has tracked how quickly pirated copies of Oscar-nominated films appear on the web for the past 6 years. He logs whether the copies were recorded with handheld cameras or copied from DVDs. A spokesindividual for the Motion Picture Association of America, the MPAA, the trade representing the largest film studios, declined to comment directly on Bio's research. She did say that typically 90% of pirated movies that appear online come from camcorders. She suggested that camcorded copies, that wrote a lot easier than it reads, are often of inferior viewing quality than those copied from DVDs. That may be true, but of this year's 26 Oscar contenders, which were announced last Thursday, 24 are available online in DVD. It's very hard to determine what to say in these things. It was Thursday, but is it last Thursday to you, or is it 2 weeks ago Thursday? Because you're listening to it on a podcast. 24 out of 26 Oscar contenders, 24 are available online in DVD quality. Bio wrote in a site, waxy.org, that this was the highest percentage of Oscar contenders to appear online since he began tracking them. He also determined through his research that members of the Motion Picture Arts Sciences, who voted for the Academy Awards, received viewing copies of 20 of the 26 nominated films. These copies are called screeners, and that they believe is where most of the pirated DVDs come from, the copies that go to screeners. Now, whether the actors themselves are doing it, some hanger-on in their entourage, or passe, as we call it. We don't know, but it's happening, but it takes longer nowadays. It takes up to 6 days for it to happen, which, of course, leads us to our poll of the week. The poll is, have you watched pirated movies? The choices are never, once by accident, but I kept one eye closed, oh, a few here and there, and all the time, down with the man. So... right arm, posturepedic, out of state. All right, so far we've got 54 people who voted in the poll. Never. 24 of you have lied and said never. Have said never. Oh, a few here and there, that's 15 of you. 10 of you have said once by accident, I kept my eyes closed. 5 said all the time, down with the man. And of course, particularly on a subject like this, I know you've got more to say than just poking a button. So when you are done, indeed, casting your poll vote, look at the little yellow box underneath it. Click on Give Us Your Opinion, and it takes you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Well done. Where you can actually leave an opinion. The question this week there, of course, is which pirated movies have you seen, if you've seen any, and why? And, of course, my favorite answer so far, Astrid and Galipta Meet the Curmudgeon. I like it.
I can honestly I haven't ever seen a pirated movie.
I have overseas because that's all that was available, and I won't say where because it's probably still going on.
Right. Oh, I'm sure it is.
That brings to mind a story we talked about a couple of years ago now, I think, where some company had developed a DVD and an optical media that would disintegrate with exposure to light.
Right. You can see that in Staples today.
Yeah. So it's for radio stations that get evaluation copies or sample copies of songs and the movies being sent out to people where they don't want it to last long.
Right, but it's very expensive.
Yeah.
I will admit, and I admit it in public, I have actually seen a pirated film.
Really?
It was hysterical. It was the Tom Cruise Day the Earth Stood Still.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say where it was, but the movie hadn't opened yet, and I saw a video.
I think you mean War of the Worlds.
What did I say?
Day the Earth Stood Still.
No, War of the Worlds.
Yeah, that was the last story you told.
Yeah, it was Day the Earth Stood Still. War of the Worlds, not Day of the Earth. Not Day of the Earth Stood Still, War of the Worlds.
And that's Keanu Reeves, anyway. And Day of the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah, it is. It's Tom Cruise in
War of the Worlds.
What you call it. So I thought, it hadn't even opened yet, and I thought, and they were selling this thing for $5. And I said, I'm sure it's the old version, but I had to buy it. And it turned out that someone had gone to a preview with a camcorder. And I only watched about the first 10 minutes of this thing.
Oh.
It was hysterical. It was out of focus. Then it was in focus. And then you can hear people talking and rustling. You can hardly hear the words on the screen at all, what they're saying on the screen. And then all of a sudden you hear, and the screen goes black. And that goes on for about another minute. You hear from the screen, right? And then all of a sudden you hear, and then the screen goes white again. Only clearly what had happened was somebody throwing a jacket over their camcorder, because now there's a zipper hanging in the frame. And for the entire rest of the time I watched it, there was a zipper hanging in the frame. And pretty much all you could see was the zipper with stuff going on behind it. It was the best $5 I have ever spent in my entire life.
Just for the entertainment.
It was just worth the laugh. I thought I was going to choke to death. I was laughing so hard. It was great.
Well, that's the thing. You know, with modern technology nowadays, you know, like you say, the camcorders and everything else have gotten so small. The sneaking that type of stuff in is no longer an issue, and even with just the average cell phones, the pictures that you can get these kids nowadays, that's the biggest thing. And a lot of these kids right now don't understand it, and we've seen it on a few computers that come into the shop, unfortunately. These kids are taking nude pictures of themselves, yeah. And they go up on the web, and they're up there. Now, what comes to bite them back in the butt is if an employer does a search,
yep,
and then all of a sudden finds these pictures that maybe they didn't want the whole world to see, and the employers are wondering,
I teach a class for all the incoming freshmen. Well, not all of them. There's thousands and thousands of them at RIT every year, but for us, many of the incoming freshmen.
A healthy number.
Yeah, exactly, a healthy number. And one of the things that we talk about is this, and I always tell them, you know, right now, about 50% of employers search Facebook and MySpace and all of that. And you got to be very careful, because when you go for a job, you know, there's 50 people who are as qualified as you are. Get over yourself. And if you're not careful, they will find this stuff. And then if they've got two people who are equally well qualified and one of them's got naked pictures on the internet, they're going with the other one.
Because if the employer can find it, the employer's customers can find it.
Right.
There have been several cases in high schools and even elementary schools where kids have been sending nude photos of themselves to other kids, and of course they get spread around. And
of course they do.
Yeah.
You know, the kids are always saying, "Well, I keep it in the protected area." Yeah. It's about this easy to break into a protected area on MySpace or Facebook, please.
Yep.
And all of the employers know those tricks, and they break in regularly, so they really can see what's going on.
I found an interesting picture on one of the weblogs. Photographer David Bergman took a massive panorama of the presidential inauguration. 1,500 megapixels.
Wow.
A 2 gigabyte master file. And so this panorama...
How many naked people?
Well, actually what he did find was Yo-Yo Ma taking a picture with his iPhone. So apparently, you know, going through Zoom, and you can zoom in and out and look through the crowd and see people in there. He's sitting in the middle of a group of everyone wearing red. I don't know why. I guess they were the red states.
Maybe.
The communists?
Could have been.
Maybe.
But yeah, it's interesting. So they're scanning through this crowd of millions of people and finding people they know and finding celebrities that were there.
Way too much time in there. Yeah. Actually, I know people who were at the mall, so I should look through that myself. I know about where they were standing, too.
Okay, tell you what, let's take one of the questions from the mailbag here. And we got Rick Turner from Bloomfield, New York. And Rick writes, HP computer running Windows XP Home Edition. When the computer is booted, I have a no start button, taskbar, or icons on my desktop. I do have wallpaper. I can Control-Alt-Delete and get to the task manager. I have gone in and out of safe mode. I browse the hard drive without any problems. I've tried to restore back to a couple of dates that I know I didn't have the problem. Nothing has corrected it. I have avoided doing a recovery at this point. This problem started the other night out of the blue. Any ideas? Thanks in advance for your help.
It's got to be a corrupted desktop file somewhere, either the registry or
desktop
the...
Desktop INI.
Right. And I don't know any way to fix that except to do a restore.
Well, Windows over Windows.
Windows over Windows,
yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It doesn't seem to me that there's that. Well, that's okay. I shouldn't get up on my high horse, but I'm
no,
the more I use.
We can. We are on the podcast.
More I use Linux, the happier I am with it, because everything exists. All the configuration files are text files, They're really ludicrously easy to back up. They're ludicrously easy to restore. You can find copies of generic ones all over the internet if you do lose one.
They're easy to read and understand.
They're really easy to read and understand. And you can't even get at them unless you're root,
right?
Which you shouldn't be on a daily basis. It's kind of ridiculous. I'm just getting tireder and tireder of Windows. My wife updated her machine the other day, and of course she installed Service Pack 3 and then couldn't get on the internet.
Yeah, how did that come out?
Well, I went back to Service Pack 2.
3 won't work on her machine?
I uninstalled Service Pack 3, and we were back on the internet instantly. Instantly. No problem.
Still a few of them out there. I mean, yeah. For the most part, like I say, just yesterday I had another client. Kept locking up, and Safe Mobile was fine. But in this case, I put the Service Pack 3 on. Changing to NTFS from FAT32, and the machine works fantastic now. It clips right along, no more hiccuping, locking up, or anything else. And it's like, oh, well, that was an easy fix. But
that's been Microsoft's bane for years, is literally millions of possible configurations of hardware.
Right.
And that is the biggest problem you run into with Linux, too, buying a generic PC and trying to find the right video driver, the right sound driver.
Right.
But most of the time, you wait a day, and someone else will have already written it for you.
That's exactly right. Before you buy a Linux box, know the components and make sure there are drivers for them. There are a lot more than there used to be, but you're best off with either an NVIDIA or ATI video card. In terms of the other stuff, it's, whatever, but...
Well, that's where, like I say, we love to pick on Bill Gates, we can. He's a lot of fun.
Big target.
But the big thing is nowadays, I mean, compared to when we were first running Windows 386
right.
and Windows 3.1, I mean, back in those days, the peripherals weren't as big. I mean, there weren't as many manufacturers.
Right.
So, to put everything in perspective, folks, nowadays the multitude of cards and combinations is phenomenal as far as the PC world. You can get this card with this combination, this motherboard with this video card, and that sound card, and it just goes on and on and on. And to get an operating system that even boots and works halfway decent is quite a milestone in today's technology.
Right, and that's one of the things that gave Apple the reputation that it has. They, for a very long time, only worked on a very limited set of hardware.
And they still do.
And they controlled it.
It's a wider limit, but it's still a limit.
Yeah. And it was all very high-end stuff, which is part of the reason Macs cost what they cost, because they use high-end components.
Yep.
But it meant that they always knew what was in that machine.
Right.
There was no... Well, with a very limited scope, there was no question what was in that machine.
And most of the Hackintoshes, they've become called, the generic PCs running Mac OS X, are using the same hardware that Apple did because it's the driver issue. You can't run OS X on a machine where there's no drivers.
Right. And Vista and Microsoft, rather, is trying to fix that with Windows 7. They're now saying that you can only run signed drivers. Signed by Microsoft, so they are going to certify all the drivers for all the systems, and hopefully that will solve some of that problem.
And that's just a scam to get more money out of developers.
Well, there's no question of that, but I mean, it's the way they're going about doing what Apple did, the way they did it.
Well, forgive my cynicism, but isn't this the same company that said that with Vista, they were going to provide all the drivers for the newer hardware, and didn't.
No, and no, they didn't.
Okay.
Most of the newer hardware has Vista drivers. It's the stuff more than a month old.
Right.
And then back to the registry. Now that I was listening to this on a Windows podcast, that now that the registry is there, there is no way we'll ever get rid of it because we'll lose backward compatibility. So anyone making a new PC... That's been hampering Microsoft as well, is that whole backward compatibility.
See, and that's nonsense, too, because you could change that. Let's say they wanted to go to config files. They put up a registry, and then they put up config files. New programs use the config files. Old programs use the registry.
And eventually...
And eventually there are no more old programs.
Well, what's the Linux term? It's a deprecating function?
Right, it's deprecated. Right, exactly right.
Well, the new Windows 7, from what I've been playing with, and I was playing with it a little just yesterday, Saturday... I'm still liking it. I mean, this is one thing I forgot to do on my Vista box was to go and check to see if, you put an application on it, how you can right-click and say compatibility mode.
Right.
I don't remember that being in Vista. It is in Windows 7. And right now, so far, the 32-bit version, I say it's fast.
It's horribly fast.
From the time, like I say, I've got a, you know, I'd say a mediocre machine. I wouldn't call it, you know, a balls to the walls PC that's blazing fast. It's only got 2 gig of memory. It's got a 256 video card, 500 gig hard drive. But and a NVIDIA is the video card maker. But when I click to start the machine, to when it actually gets to the desktop. Now, it's going through, you know, finding the hard drives and booting and searching and everything else, loading 40 seconds.
Yeah.
From the time I hit that on button to that I'm able to move around and start typing a command or anything else, 40 seconds. Now, that's pretty darn good. That's a lot faster than Vista.
It is a lot faster than Vista. Although, Ubuntu 9.04 is supposed to beat it.
Oh, really?
They have a new EXT4. EXT3 is the default format for the hard drives now. Like, it's like NTFS or one of those. Mm-hmm. It's called EXT3. Right, it's file format. It's the drive format. It's the file system format.
Right.
And now they have EXT4, and they're saying that Ubuntu 9.04 boots in 21.4 seconds.
That's acceptable.
That's acceptable.
Hello, Buffalo.
With something like that, you know, right now, a lot of people hibernate or... whatever the other one is called.
Sleep.
Well, hibernate, actually. Whichever one boots faster, I think it's sleep. I never remember. I don't remember. Which means which. And then when you hibernate, because when you bring it out of hibernation mode, it's quick, you're in the thing. But you waste battery because it's still running, actually, the system in very low level. So if you leave it hibernated for a couple of days, you run out of battery, right?
Sure.
Where with this thing, if it boots in 21 seconds, I'll shut it down.
Exactly.
I mean, what the heck?
Yeah.
And that's been the whole problem, is that people don't want to wait for it to reboot, so they leave it on.
Right.
And multiplied by hundreds of millions of computers, and that's a lot of wasted electricity.
Right, right.
Unless you actually are running something when you're not sitting in front of it.
Right. And then there are the systems that have the, I don't think they call it flash boot. I forget what they call it. Some laptops now have a system whereby when you open the lid, you have a choice of running the operating, booting the operating system, or running this little mini kernel thing, which is just a web browser and a music player.
Is that available now? I've read about that, but I haven't
seen
it. Yeah,
there are some laptops that have it. Not okay. A lot of them, but a couple here and there. And that means if all you know, 80% of the time, what are you doing? You want to play your music or you want to check something on the web.
Sure.
Boom, you're done. You know, if you're going to type a paper or whatever, yeah, then you got to boot. But beyond that, you're just in this little thing, and you're having fun. I don't know.
Getting back to the Windows compatibility, I read recently that Windows 7, Microsoft will be planning to be able to run, apparently in virtualization, a past version of Windows.
That would be cool.
So if you're using Windows 7 as a hypervisor, run Windows 3.1 or whatever version of Windows you want to run your old apps.
That's a compatibility tab. On the application, what you do is you right-click on it, and there's a compatibility tab
okay. There.
And from within there, you can sit there and say, yeah, pretend this is running Windows 3.1, Windows 95, 98, ME.
That's interesting.
So it's already in there.
Yes, it's already in Windows System 7.
But if they're really running it as a hypervisor, then you better have a lot of memory.
Right.
But I think this is just faking it out. You know, like the old, remember DOS 4? What was it DOS 4 that we had to put those commands in to fake it out?
Yep, yep.
Setver.
Yeah, setver.
Yep.
Remember setver.
And pretend that it's something else, you know.
All right, this is an interesting interesting news item. Intigo, like Stratego, has discovered a new Trojan horse, OS10.Trojan.iServices.a.
The first one.
The first one, which is currently circulating in copies of Apple's iWork 09 found on BitTorrent trackers and other sites containing links to pirated software. The version of iWork 09, Apple's productivity suite, are complete and functional, but the installer contains an additional package called iWorkServices.pkg. When installing iWork 09, the iWork Services package is installed. The installer for the Trojan horse is launched as soon as the user begins the installation of iWork, following the installer's request of an administrator's password. So since you're installing a new product, it asks you for your username and password, and of course you give it.
Naturally.
Because you want to install naturally. He's on second. Following the installer's request of an administrator password, this software is installed.
I don't know. He's on third.
Stop me before I free associate again. This software is installed as a part of the startup system in system library startup items iWork services. a location reserved normally for Apple startup items, where it has read-write execute permissions for root. For those of you who are not technically savvy, that's really, really, really bad. The malicious software connects to a remote server over the internet. This means that a malicious user will be alerted that this Trojan horse is installed on different Macs and will have the ability to connect to them and perform various activities remotely. The Trojan horse may also download additional components to an infected Mac. Antigo is issuing this alert to warn Mac users not to download iWork 09 installers from sites offering pirated software. Tens of thousands of people have done this already, by the way. Tens of thousands of people known to have downloaded this particular Trojan horse. Excuse me, I won't call it a virus because that upsets you for some reason. The risk of infection is serious. Users may face extremely serious consequences if their Macs are accessible to malicious users. Shockingly and completely unconnected, Intego Virus Barrier X4 and X5 with virus definitions dated January 22, 2009 or later protect against this Trojan horse. Intego recommends that users never download and install software from untrusted sources or questionable websites. This goes right back to that jerk from the other night when I was at, well, why should I have be running antivirus on my machine? We don't get viruses.
Yeah. Well, this is actually the third Trojan horse that has come out, and they've so far been relegated to porn sites and pirate sites.
Right.
But they are out there, and you could get one.
An antivirus wouldn't protect against this. This is for people who are attempting to steal.
But an antivirus will protect against it, because if you're running a good antivirus program, when you have it on your drive and you scan your drive, if it's a really good one, as you're downloading it, it will catch it.
Because most antivirus programs also do anti-phishing and anti-spamware. Mm-hmm. So the thing here is, it was an unknown thing. Unknown Trojan, unknown malware. So if you were running an old antivirus, you wouldn't have found it.
Or if, as so many Mac people do, you weren't running any antivirus at all.
So that's a good reason to make sure you update your antivirus every day at a minimum.
Right.
So you're setting yourself up by not running antivirus, not updating it, and stealing software.
Right.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure
I had all the boxes
checked.
Right. Yeah. Right. So make sure you got all those boxes checked. Ooh, I'm 100%. They're talking about me. So yeah, I think that we're really past the innocent era with Macs. You know, we're into the point now where it is possible to get some sort of infection and have to deal with it. And by simply making yourself less vulnerable, you're doing both yourself and the entire Mac community, and then incidentally the entire Windows community and Linux community, a big service. Now, yes, it is much harder to be infected on a Mac or on Linux than on Windows, because so very little runs as administrator under those two operating systems. If you're smart, so very little runs as administrator. But it is still not impossible, either through a hole in some piece of software or through a Trojan like this that sneaks in behind something that's quasi-legitimate. That is to say, at least you know you should be entering your username and password at this point. And then you're caught.
And this kind of Trojan could conceivably leave your Mac computer on the internet as open as any Windows machine.
Well, it's not just that people could steal stuff from you. They could then use you to attack somewhere else.
That's
they could
my
use
point.
You to serve child pornography.
Because
they could use
they
you
can
to break
ports.
Into the government. Right, right, mm-hmm. right. And it's just
you're
hiding
get
in
nailed.
The background.
You're going to get nailed.
That's right. You're the one who's going to be in trouble.
Don't
oh,
steal
no,
software.
It was some sort of virus or
it
Trojan.
It should go
or
without
something.
Saying.
Well, why didn't you protect against that? Well, I didn't have to. I'm on a Mac.
Why
well,
were you stealing software?
You know what?
Software?
I think it's because
jail time for you.
Now, because they've had their reputation for so long, now it gives these hackers something to strive for.
Yep.
I mean, PCs are doing it on a daily basis. No big thing.
Yeah, we've been saying that for years. Every time there's a new Windows virus had come out and the the news reports usually say it doesn't affect Mac or Linux, and it's only a matter of time. And we've been saying for several years now, if I were a bad guy, I would have written one by now just to be known as the first.
Well, I think they're starting to do that now. They're starting to take this as a personal challenge.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's been a year since the last Trojan came out, the DNS changer Trojan. But I've seen a resurgence of that in the last couple of months. That one's mostly been going on porn sites, masquerading as a video codec you need to install to watch the video.
But it doesn't have to be a porn site anywhere. How easy would it have been to set up a site to view the Obama inauguration?
Yep.
Again, and oh, in order to do that, you've got to download this codec or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes you did because a lot of them were in Silverlight.
Right.
Which is itself.
I had a lot of people talking to me all day that day because they were trying to get it online and all the feeds were stalling. I had the direct AP feed. I just went right to AP, grabbed their direct video feed, and except for one tiny little hesitation early in the thing, never a problem. The entire time, I never had a problem. Of course, I didn't tell anybody else that because I didn't want them getting on the same feed I was on and slowing it down. Well, I mean, I'm sorry.
I listened on the radio. That was good enough for me.
The AP still exists?
Yeah. But yeah, it was the cleanest feed I found all day, so that was kind of nice.
You ready for this one, guys?
Probably not.
This gentleman, Shane McCoyvey.
Come back, Shane.
Ready for this?
Yeah.
Kenton, Victoria, Australia.
Cool.
Yay, man.
Writes, received an iPod for Christmas. Installed iTunes and downloaded music, audiobooks to the iPod, no problem. Have tried to edit/add songs, etc., to the computer, will not recognize the iPod, and freezes iTunes. Restored the computer to an early setting and tried reinstalling iTunes with the same results. I want to reformat the C drive on my computer and leave the partition drives alone. What is the recommended process for this to achieve a clean format and reinstall of Windows XP and programs? Cannot find an FAQs. It is hard to believe that you guys can present a show for so long with so much enthusiasm and patience, potential, and hospitality, respond to listeners' questions, irrespective to how basic or how often the question is asked. We need more programs in Australia. Syndicate it, please. Good health, and on your 20th anniversary, congrats.
Well, God
Shane
bless you,
of
Shane.
Kenton.
Wonder if he has any contacts in Australia.
Thank you, Shane. That's the, right. Yeah, talk to your local radio station. Get us out.
Well,
in
I will
Australia.
Yeah, again. I, you know, after we answer all these questions, I write a quick note. I respond to all these folks, and I'll also tell them to listen to the podcast.
Yep, exactly. He's on the podcast. He's now famous.
Down Under.
Does he have to listen to it backwards?
I don't
upside
know.
Down.
But
and upside down. Yeah.
Well, let's first answer their
and question. Tomorrow.
And they have to listen to it yesterday, actually. I think it's yesterday for him.
No, I think they're ahead of us.
Oh, no, maybe they're ahead of us. Maybe it's tomorrow for him, yeah. Yeah. How'd we do, Shane?
Yeah.
You should already know.
But we haven't told him what to do a day
ahead
of time.
Oh, that's right. That's, well, you should already know.
Take it away,
okay,
Steve.
Okay, thanks for listening, Shane. I hope it worked out for you.
Well, the initial problem of the iPod not being recognized, there was a problem in some of the early, I have to assume Windows, don't I?
Is it Windows?
He said C drive.
C drive, yeah, Windows.
Yes, and you said it's XP. Windows XP yeah. with 1 gig.
There was some problems in the first version 8.0 of iTunes for Windows that Apple fixed in version 8.0.
What?
Yeah. We really upset.
A new build?
It was a new build. It was the same iTunes version, but it was a different Windows library they loaded. So they didn't change the build number, which you set off at the time, too.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah. So one thing you can try doing is downloading the current iTunes 8.0.2, and that might fix the initial problem. You shouldn't have to go back and reformat your hard drive. One of the issues we've seen a few times is the iPod is basically a USB hard drive. So when you plug it into your computer, your USB plug-and-play has to be operating right. The USB mass storage drivers have to be working right. So there could be something corrupted in that USB's mass storage level as well.
Or alternately, something else he loaded in between when he loaded his iPod up and today. You know, if he loaded some other let's say, perhaps an HP USB printer.
Yeah.
HP software invariably screws up every other stinking thing on your machine.
So if you can try a different USB hard drive and see if that also works or also doesn't work, that will point you in a direction too.
Well, the first thing I would suggest is you find a friend and plug his iPod into their machine.
Right. Or even a flash drive.
See if iTunes, or plug a flash drive into his machine.
Yep.
But it could certainly be the iPod. God knows I haven't had a good one yet. I'm sorry, but we've had like 5 of them and all of them have a problem. Every single one of them has a problem. I'm done buying iPods. I'm just done. So he should test his iPod on somebody else's. He's got to have a friend with an iPod and iTunes. He should just plug it in and see if it gets recognized. He doesn't have to register it or do any of that stuff. He just has to see if it's recognized and then say no and pull it out again. Right. I mean, that's easy enough.
Another troubleshooting step is to make a new username on your PC and see if the same problem happens in that username. That's a common step on the Mac, too. If the problem exists, it's a system-level problem. If it doesn't exist, it's a user-level problem, so your next troubleshooting step is a little different.
Right.
So you can help isolate where the problem lies.
Right.
But as far as reinstalling Windows, you can reinstall Windows over Windows if you don't want to lose all your existing applications, but it sounded like he just wanted to erase his C drive and reinstall. And pretty much that's what you do. You erase your C drive and put the disk in.
Just read every single prompt really carefully.
Make sure you pick your C drive and not your D drive or E drive.
Right. And don't let it reformat the whole drive, just the C partition. So you can do it, Shane. It's not impossible to do. You just need to be really, really sure at every single step that you're selecting the right choice.
We had a customer install Windows on their Mac, which you can do these days, but they missed the boot camp setup instructions, just stuck the Windows disk in and said install. And when it got to the point where it asked what partition to use, they said use this unrecognized partition. It erased all of the Mac-ness and turned it into just a PC.
Yep.
You miss step one, install boot camp.
Yep.
Oh, yes. Speaking about products and being unhappy with things, we had a couple of customers come in. You know, we were talking before a few weeks ago about the new Kodak ESP printers.
Yeah.
Turns out they've got an issue. That being the print heads. Evidently, unlike HP and that, where the whole electronics for the print head is in the cartridge. Which makes them more expensive.
Right. But it also means that every time you replace the cartridges, you get a whole new setup.
Right. The print head in the Kodak printers is actually in the printer itself.
Right.
And evidently these are very, I stress, very prone to clogging and breaking. And if you're having an issue, which they don't say, and you got to go through the tech folks and really talk to them and blah, 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 get it out of them to get a new print head. They are very prone to print head failure.
And are these under warranty?
Yeah.
So far, because it's such a new printer.
Yep.
Right.
So that was one thing. Print head, or is it the same print head they're providing?
Pardon?
Have they improved the print head that they're using as a replacement?
I don't know. All I know is that there's an issue. You can call and get a replacement print head. You would think, because, I mean, they've got such great technology right now that, supposedly the inks are better. They print more, pictures. The quality is better.
Well, as always, somebody's cut a corner somewhere.
But the print head is, let's see, how can we put it? Cheap!
Well, it's one of the things I liked about Canon printers. I don't know if they still do that. But the ink and the heads were separately user-replaceable. Most printers, the head is not user-replaceable, and it's 90% the cost of the printer.
Yep.
So some of the Canons were nice that you could replace the head yourself. But then the annoying thing there is you've got 12 consumable parts. Six inks and six heads.
Right, mm-hmm. right. The thing I really liked, though, about the Canon that I had was that all the colors were separate reservoirs.
Right, we like Epson printers because of that, too. Yeah. Epson right now is our favorite printer, and a lot of it is also the separate ink tanks. It's also the paper path. Paper goes in the back and comes out the front.
Right.
With HP, it goes in the front, it has to turn 180 degrees and come out the front again.
Right.
Which makes for a physically smaller printer. But then the paper path is more complicated. You can't use as heavy a paper.
The rollers usually go. The take-up rollers is the biggest thing on an HP. Because of doing that 180 turn, those rollers lose their tackiness, and they usually pick up five or six sheets, and then all of a sudden they're coming out the front, alcohol all stuck and together and all printed on, just because the take-up rollers are too gummed up because of the paper, what's on, the film and that that's on the paper.
Right.
And with more people using recycled paper, the paper quality is getting lower, so that puts more paper dust in the printer, which increases the problems.
Yep. And that's yet another reason, I guess, to just buy $100 printers and every 4 or 5 months just replace them.
Yeah, when it's time to buy new ink, it's 80, super, right, right 80, 80 bucks. Yeah, 80 bucks for the ink on a $100 printer just to buy a new one.
I want to do one more question here. This one's right to Steve, and it's Bonnie from Rochester. Can't find free stuff for the Macs.
What?
That's her thing. Can't find free stuff for my Mac. I cannot download or use Adawares, Vibot, Search and Destroy, Zone Alarm, VGA, and a few others. I think she meant AVG. And a few others for my new Mac. I am thinking of returning. Don't tell me that there aren't already protected, and I don't need any firewall, antivirus programs.
Good for you,
because
Bonnie.
I have heard you that Macs do. So please help me, Bonnie.
She's looking for the wrong program.
She's looking for the wrong program. Yeah, she's looking for Windows programs. You're never going to find a Mac version of SpyBot because it's a Windows program. And we have talked in the past about Mac versions of a lot of the software. The most common one is ClamAV, which is an antivirus program and free.
For Mac OS X, it's called ClamXAV.
ClamXAV, right. There is a commercial anti-spyware program called MacScan from a company called SecureMac. For the longest time, we joked that it was almost, not worthless, but there weren't any spyware for the Mac. So what it was finding is a lot of programs phone home. When you install them,
right,
they'll phone your registration back to the manufacturer as an anti-piracy measure. And so MacScan will find that. There's also another one called Little Snitch that will find that as well. So they were finding legitimate programs doing their own functions. But now that we have actual spyware and actual viruses and right, Trojan horses.
And then there's this Intego virus,
right,
barrier,
Intego, well,
X4
right,
and
X5. The commercial antivirus programs are Intego, Symantec, McAfee, and what's the other one?
For Mac?
For Mac, yeah. There's a fourth one.
But the free one is ClamX.
The free one is ClamX, right.
And
that's the one
and
I
Bonnie,
run.
For, yep. Yeah, it's excellent. I use ClamX on my Mac, or ClamAV.
That's a enterprise quality product.
I suspect then it should be Clam 10AV, shouldn't it?
Yeah, but it's Roman numeral 10, so it's an X.
Right, that's what I mean. At any rate, Bonnie, the reality is that the Security Tango, which it sounds like you're trying to run, is strictly for Windows machines. For a Mac, there are the free program would be ClamXAV, and that does as much as anything does on the Mac nowadays.
It's not a firewall, though. Firewall she already has if she has Leopard.
Right.
Well, any
right,
version of OS X had a firewall built in.
Okay.
Yeah. But the thing is that you have to remember is that up until now, there's been a very small market for antivirus, anti-Trojan, anti-spyware programs on the Mac for two reasons. One is that there is such a scarcity of those things on the Mac. And the second is, and I will admit it, the smugness of Mac owners who really do believe deep down in their hearts that they're better than everybody else and don't have to run any of this stuff.
Not all of us.
No, not all of you. I'm not saying all of you, but the majority. And you have to admit there is a huge majority.
I admit that you've probably seen that.
I have.
I must assert that I haven't seen that myself. It's not a majority in my experience.
Well, it's less same, now than it used to be.
Same thing with BMW owners or,
exactly,
or Mercedes
I'm not,
owners.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. When you own the high-end thing, you want to feel you're better than everybody else, and I understand that. It's just not true anymore.
We had a kid in our shop. He's got a pickup truck from a major American manufacturer. I suppose I can say Ford. And we had a customer come in with a really cool, I think it was the Chrysler 300M. You know, Chrysler's really cool car, which is saying a lot for Chrysler. unfortunately, he railed on that for a few minutes until we smacked him. Well, one, it's the customer's car. And,
yeah, right.
The customer's very proud of it and likes it. But just because it's not a Ford doesn't mean it's crap.
Right.
And for all the Chevy owners, just
a
because...
fix or repair daily?
Yeah, yeah.
Found
just,
on
for
road
the,
dead.
For all the Chevy
and
owners, Ford
I drive
is a crap.
A Ford.
Yeah. That had a Ford pickup for a while.
Well, and GM is in play, I believe, at the moment.
In play in what way?
I think they're looking to be bought by somebody. I forget who.
Oh.
I forget who that is. But they're not doing well. None of the American car dealers are doing really
Fiat
well.
Fiat is looking to re-enter the U.S. market by teaming with Chrysler.
Right, right. And yes. And Chrysler's really doing the best of all of the big three. GM and Ford are in trouble, and Chrysler's actually doing semi-well.
Dragging down Mercedes?
Dragging down Mercedes.
Well, they don't have stockholders to answer to.
The PT Cruiser is now
a
thing
on the block.
Of the past.
Yeah. Sometime this summer.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see. It's
Did
not,
they come up with a replacement for the PT Cruiser?
Yeah. Yes, call the HHR.
I love that. I love my HHR.
Well, and it's a Chevy, and I was a Chevy guy most of my life until suddenly I was buying Fords, and I'm not sure why. But who knows, in the future what it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, Fords are made in Canada and Toyotas are made in Kentucky, so which is a more American car?
Most of them are
made in
Mexico.
Exactly.
Yep. Mexico.
What?
Most of them are made in Mexico.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. I love driving to Toronto and seeing that giant Ford Windstar plant.
Yep.
Right. Well, now it's the Aerostar plant.
It's the Aerostar plant.
Yeah. And the dealers can't
say that.
Yeah, my
Chevy came from Canada. That's right.
Yep.
They just say when they, you know, credit what I was asking about my car. Well, it comes from the Southwest. Well, Mexico.
It's NAFTA.
We can't say that. It comes from the Southwest.
Yeah, right.
The North American free trade. Everything in North America is local.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yep.
Mm-hmm. NAFTA, no American factories taking applications.
Yeah. Nice.
But this is a computer show.
Suddenly we're a political show. That's exactly right. I got time for another news item? Or
yeah, go right ahead.
Excellent. Yep. Well, speaking of worms, brace yourself, because the worm that's infected millions of PCs is a very well-engineered piece of malware, according to one security expert. But researchers still have no clear idea of what the hackers plan to do with the collection of computers they've compromised with Conficker. It's called Conficker. I was on the Wham Morning News the other day talking about this. They made me spell it. Conficker.
Okay, then.
It's the only way they could get it over the air. I had to spell it for Conficker. This is a very well-engineered piece of software, said Fred Huger, Vice President of Development at Symantec Corporation Security Response Group. It is very well thought out. Whoever wrote it, it's not their first time writing malware. It looks as if the author has had a great deal of expertise writing software and is fully versed in writing network-level code. Conficker, also called Down Add Up. There seems to be no N in there. I thought it was down and up, but it's down and up. Has infected an estimated 6% of PCs worldwide. If you figure out how many PCs there are in the world, that's a gigundous number.
Yeah,
it is.
The worm spreads by exploiting a four-month-old vulnerabilities in Windows, by brute-forcing a password attack, and by hitchhiking on USB devices like flash drives. Huger was impressed by the technical chops of Down It Up's maker or makers. The worm itself is very complex, he said. At the byte level, it implements things in some novel ways. Compared to most malware, which Huger said was written off the cuff, Down It Up is downright elegant and effective. Most researchers, including those at Symantec, have said that the worm is the most invasive seen in the last 6 years. At a basic level, it tends to perform well, and that's helped it spread. But much more than Hackercraft made Down It Up a huge success. Other elements, including timing, the countries at the top of the attack list, and even software piracy rates contributed. This was put together in a very brief period of time, Huger said, referring to the spotting of the worm's first variant just 3 weeks after Microsoft issued an emergency patch. The big thing is that software piracy has also played a role. Symantec has seen Down It Up, and it's most successful in countries like China. For instance, the worm has accounted for nearly a quarter of all recent infections. These are also countries that have historically high rates of running counterfeit software. People running Windows illegally are believed to patch their machines less rigorously than users with legitimate copies for fear that Microsoft's anti-piracy technology will detect and mark the operating system as stolen. Patching habits have also played a part. We feel that consumers in North America and Western Europe are better educated about remaining patched, and there are therefore low Down It Up infection rates in those regions, whereas Down It Up or Conficker in third world countries and in places where there's a lot of piracy is really, really catching hold.
One thing, though, you bring up, and you know, it still scares me, that folks have gotten so complacent on these new flash drives that, you know, folks don't take the time to scan them. Hello, folks. They're bigger than an average floppy nowadays.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, 1 and 2 and 8 and 16 gig flash drives that you're carrying around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you're carrying around.
It's the size of my thumbnail.
Hello, yep. There's no locking mechanism on them.
Nick is not exaggerating.
That is the scary part. You folks have gotten so complacent that you just shove it into a machine and you don't scan it. Those could be just as infected as the old day floppies. And the technology now for these spyware programs and everything else is to start looking for other drives, especially flash drives. They're looking for USB ports, and all of a sudden they flash open, and they jump over to that flash drive. Because now, instead of just infecting your machine, and you put a flash drive in, and now I get onto your flash drive, everywhere she go, to work, to somebody else's house or whatever, you could infect their machine with this virus or Trojan.
It's back to the floppy disks. That's how viruses used to propagate.
Now it's right. Disks. Now it's flash drives. And they love flash drives because they know you're going to put it in at least two machines. At least.
And right. There's no place to lock them. Most of them. Yep. I mean, I've got one. This one here that I carry. This is radio, so you can't see it. But this carries an SD card in it. The SD card has a locking mechanism on it. So I know when I put this in any client's machine, one, I'm not walking away with a virus, and I can't get one. They go, well, how do you know that? Because it's locked. It is always locked. I do not leave the shop without it.
Right.
Locked. Because I don't care to get sued for, you know, infecting some other client's machine with a virus and, you know, really be in it. Because the variety, in fact, we were commenting, Thursday, the array of clients that I have, just in one day, we wound up going through a lawyer's, we went to a garden shop, OBGYN, another mechanic's garage, where else was it? OBGYN, a tattoo parlor.
That was a busy day.
That was a busy day.
You know, and I mean, there are random ones.
Show us your new ink.
Oh, that's
it. Yeah. We work for trade sometimes.
Yes. I've got, as a matter of fact, next month I go for tattoo number 7. I've got two more of my grandchildren up, and then I will be posting it. I want to do it once all their photos.
Lydia. Have you
pictures.
Met Lydia? Lydia the tattooed lady. PC Tech.
Yep. Got four of my 6 grandchildren tattooed on my back as different animals. Because 2 of my grandchildren are Native American Indians. So that's how we started with the whole theme is, like my one grandson, Cody, he's a bear with his name underneath the bear and then his birthday. So I do that for each of my grandchildren. I let them have...
You need to stop having grandchildren. You don't have that much back left.
No, we're done. We're done.
Okay.
Yeah, my bad.
I don't think you control the grandchildren.
Yeah, I don't think you have anything to do with it, even though I'm the one who started this.
No. My girls definitely have, especially Amy... My youngest has 4. She goes, Dad, that's it. I cut the tubes. That's it. If you want any more grandchildren, you're SOL. I said, that's okay.
My mother-in-law said to me the smartest thing any human has ever said. She said, never have more children than you have hands.
Yep. Uh-oh. Well, right. My grandmother had
My grandmother must have had 15 hands.
19.
19 hands. Yeah.
When the children outnumber the parents.
Yeah.
That's right. I found a Muppet version of Lydia, the tattooed lady.
Yep. I remember that.
Getting back to what Dave was talking about, though. Now, this isn't a complete solution, but it gives me an idea. If I were a coder, and I'm not, I wish I were. I know some. Wouldn't it be interesting to have in the operating system, whatever operating system you're on, if you plug the USB drive in your machine and it defaults that your machine will not write to it. If you want to write to it, you got to click a box or something.
That's nice. There is a slightly less useful thing that many machines do. For example, my Linux box, when I plug a drive into it, if there's something on that drive that would normally run, I get a box that pops up.
If there's an .exe file on it, you mean?
Well, if there's anything that would run.
Okay.
Right? Any sort of auto-started thing. It comes up and it says, you know, there's something in here that wants to auto-start. Do you want to run it? Of course, I always say no because it's going to be a Windows thing anyway.
Yep.
But there are things that do that legitimately. For example, we have I have an iron key, which is a USB key that requires you to type in a password to access it. And if you type the password in wrong 3 times, it actually sizzles the chip. It's done.
What I want to say this with extreme prejudice?
With extreme prejudice.
No kidding.
It sizzles it. I mean, smoke comes out, for real. And it's designed
that's
that way.
That's incentive to type it in 3 times wrong.
Ain't that the truth? Well, we did one. We sizzled one just to see if it worked. Yep, it worked.
Cover it with black powder next
expensive.
Time.
That was a very expensive little thing. But, you know, when you put that in, the first thing it, of course, wants to do is install some software. And we don't let it. And then I've got another one that's encrypted.
Right.
And it wants to install something. So, you know, sometimes that's legitimate.
Exactly.
But most of the time it's not. So It's an interesting problem. But generally speaking, unless you know that the thing you're installing should be allowed to run, it should at least ask you. It should always, at the very least, say, something wants to run here. Do you want to allow that? No, I think not. Thank you so much. And then you take that out, and then you destroy it with extreme prejudice.
But here's the thing. Sometimes I download software on my Mac, and it, of course, asks me, you just downloaded, take two, you just downloaded this from the internet. Do you really want to run it? And, of course, to do that, I must say yes. But I'm still trusting that it is what it says it is.
And you don't know that.
I don't know that, except ClamXAV checks it automatically as it, or just after it downloads.
Right.
And I'm trusting that ClamXAV will catch anything.
See,
I've had
a couple of false positives. Right. But I'd rather have a false positive than a false negative. I am less trusting than you. Whenever I download something, I then rescan my drive.
The whole drive?
Yeah. Well, I just, yeah.
Even on your Linux box?
Even on my Linux box.
Okay.
I don't care. I'm a belt and suspenders kind of guy when it comes to security.
Well, you're probably smarter than I am, too.
Well, I don't think so, but certainly about this, I may well be more paranoid than you
are.
Well,
yeah, but
there you go.
All it takes is to get burned once.
That's exactly right.
You know, you do that, and you know.
Well, and I can't get burned. I'm the systems administrator. You know, if I want
to
get burned at home, if I want to get burned on my laptop, that's my problem.
Mm-hmm.
I get burned at work, it's the school's problem. And so I have to be.
Which is then your problem.
Which is way then my problem. Which will then no longer be my problem.
Well, you should be getting burned enough to tell other people how not to. I mean, you should be doing experiments, right?
And we do, but those are not on my main machine.
Right.
You know, I'm very paranoid whenever I download. We've had stuff come from vendors. You know, here's the update, whatever. Thank you very much. Here's how you install it. Thank you very much. Do you want us to wait on the line? I said, well, I'm gonna be scanning for a while, so no thanks. I'll call you if there's a problem.
Okay, tell you what, Nick, I'm going to let you wrap it up here in just a second, but I want to remind folks, you hear us here on the podcast, but also encourage you, if you get a chance, check us out every Friday night in Second Life. We're there every Friday evening starting at 6 o'clock. That is Linden time. That's 9 o'clock Rochester, New York time, where we are broadcasting from. And that's
for
a wrap.
Shane, that's got to be someplace else.
Yeah, that's a whole nother world. So with that,
he can do the math.
All right. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And you've been listening to Sound Bites.